Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hi, David.
Yes, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Peter is still there as well.
Yes.
So tell me this from you guys' perspective. Is it possible that given the opposition party was offered, well, not the opposition, there's no opposition, the Democratic Labour Party was offered 2 seats to fill in the Senate. Do you think it's possible that there was a discussion within the ruling party to say, if they're not going to take up that, then if after Lee Watts could go over and appoint 2 senators, he can do that? That's my first question.
But Peter, you take it first.
Everyone seems to think that he made a decision just to go over there. I mean, he will explain later, hopefully, but is it not possible my scenario could have been the scenario?
Yeah, I don't think that's the case, and my information tells me that it is not the case. That okay, it is not a situation where this is an inside job, that it is a genuine situation where the rival feels that he has something that he wants to achieve. As David said earlier, all of this will become more...
Your voice is coming and going a bit more, so you need to get closer to the microphone, Peter.
Yeah, I was saying that all of that we will probably know when Reverend starts to speak. And until such time, you know, we're not going to have a clear idea of what's happening.
All right, fair enough. Next thing, David.
Hi.
Now, earlier you had indicated while you were speaking about the salary of totaling $160,000 or thereabouts.
Yes.
And the fact that if he wasn't given a ministerial position, obviously he doesn't have that. I do not want to believe that Reverend Noel Bishop Astley would be so simple-minded, in my view, to make a decision like this after going to the people under the Barbados Labour Party. Because, as Peter said, had he not done that under the Barbados Labour Party, I don't know we would have been speaking about him as a representative today for that constituency. If he had gone with any other party, I don't know necessarily, I think that he would have been one of the people that benefited from the swing that would have been occurring across the country. And I do not believe... or we wouldn't want to believe that money would be the motivation or even part of the motivation for this move that he has made. So I want to believe that he genuinely has fundamental issues with things. Hopefully he will explain that if you understand where I'm coming from.
Yes, I hear you.
All right, good.
You're looking for high principle, right?
No, hold on. I said I don't want to believe that that's the case because that would make him look, in my view, absolutely small on so many levels. Yes, I removing the dollar figure attached to it. Fundamentally, if that was the reason, that would reduce it in my estimation for many people. Next thing, you know, here you had mentioned Bobby Morris' name earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had to laugh because I heard Bobby Morris last week say about a couple of things that he recognized the party needs to look at in terms of how they lost the election. And he said one of the things is, and I quote, he said, "We will have to start looking at his social media seriously." And when I heard that, I laughed out loud because can we get some comical at this stage in life and in elections could be making a comment like that. I also enjoyed yesterday listening to Glenn Clark. On the radio, I was coming up past Marcia Kettle's office and I was laughing out loud. Then he basically stepped away from this situation, attaching himself with Arthur Lee as it relates to moving away from the party and going over to the opposition. I like you thinking where you should go back to the polls because this came last week, David. All of us was on literal no sleep coming out of the election and the counting of the votes. And I remember you going off here around 5 in the morning and I scared the course with VOB. And for my mind, a week later, to have this situation here, I let Glenn Clark get to be in his position that perhaps he should go back to the polls. And I suspect if he goes back to the polls now, in light of this development, actually will not necessarily be voted back in. All depends on who the opponent is, but I suspect he will lose a lot of votes based on
I think it's too early to go down there, you know. I hear people already...
In relation to Glenn Clark's comment.
Well, but even taking Glenn Clark's comments into consideration... There is so much that can happen between now and the next elections. There's a lot of work to be done. I think the most significant part of all that we have heard this past week is that it indicates to us that as Barbadians, we are in an environment where we have to brace ourselves for even more tough times. We have given a lot of time to the former administration. Since 2008, we bought into the notion that Barbados was in a difficult situation because of the world economy initially, and that we needed to make sacrifices. That we did time and time again. And the change of government can cause some people in Barbados to believe that this means that the situation will automatically improve. I don't think that you should be looking at it that way. I think it is clear that we have got a lot of serious work to do, and we should really take the lead from what we've seen from the Prime Minister, getting up, going out there, appearing to take the mandate very seriously, look at the mission critical areas, the sewage project, the economy, appearing to be prepared to work several hours in a day to make it happen. And that example is what we need to take as Bajans going forward, recognizing though that we are not going to have an easy time in the immediate future. Yes.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Listen to my view on this. I said this already and I'll repeat it now again. Yesterday, listening to the Prime Minister and then watching it back last night, right? I heard the Marshal say that the former government basically tied this government hand. And I feel as a taxpayer and as a Barbadian, right, that we all got our hands tied for some of these contracts that the government passed would have hooked the country onto.
There's a noise coming from the background, one of the phones there.
That's not
right. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yes, you were saying?
I'm saying I do not see this as the isolation as the Democratic Labour Party government take the Barbados Labour Party's hands, because they take us as a country's hands in many respects. Because let's say that some of these contracts have clauses that you can get out, but you have to pay. We, the taxpayers, have to pay. So we are on the hook to compensate. And I don't like the idea, because the Prime Minister said it, so I should be free to say it. When you look at the NCF, the Transport Board, and the challenges at the Transport Board, for example, and you got at the late hour renewing contracts and stuff like that, whether it's relationships on different levels, I fundamentally have an issue with that. Now, one would argue that between 1994 and 2008, the Barbados Labour Party would have done the same. If the Democratic Labour Party had came into office and made that charge and laid it out like the Prime Minister again, we might say it would have been different. Yes, we were saddled with, as they said, with the prison and such like. But when I look at some of these personal, seemingly personal positions where we're going to make sure that we have you sorted out before we leave office and late hour after Parliament was dissolved, and miss the Democratic Labour Party.
But you need to hear their side of the story, though.
Well, but that's what I'm getting.
You need to hear their side of the story.
They need that somebody needs to come out and speak on their behalf.
Yes.
And I'll put this question to you. Given that the credibility of the Prime Minister has taken a hit as a person who's going to step forward and speak, given that people like Ronald Jones have moved away from the party and elected politics and such like, my question to you and Peter in closing, who do you really get credibility from now in the Democratic Labour Party to step forward and articulate the rationale behind these decisions?
That's a hard one.
It's difficult. I think I said before that I don't really think that any of them have any kind of moral standing to come forward and defend anything. My feeling is what the DLP, the old guard of the DLP, needs to apologize. I think that should be their role. Less explaining and more saying, look, we
dropped the ball. Peter, I have one last question, David. One last question to Peter. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yes, Peter, you or David can respond to this. Do you think that Fundil Stewart in years to come will have the same credibility and goodwill of Erskine Sandiford, given that when Erskine Sandiford left office, he left under a cloud of insult and confidence was lost in him as a leader? Do you think history will be so kind to Fundil Stewart as it is to Erskine Sandiford?
It depends. It depends upon how Barbados is led in the future. I think that Fundil Stewart's leadership, or lack thereof, has helped to enhance the image of Erskine Sandiford. Because in the 14 years after Erskine Sandiford left office, it was not spoken of in as positive a light as happened when Fundil Stewart led Barbados. It therefore means that if Frondell Stewart is to go through a similar experience, it means that we will have a leader who is worse than Frondell Stewart. That's how I see it.
I agree with David 150%. That's what it comes down to. My views on Erskine Sandiford changed a whole lot during this era. And I think that to have my views on Frondell Stewart, I don't know about anybody else, but for my views to change on Frondell Stewart, we would have to have a leader that is considerably worse.
And then that means that Barbados will be in real trouble.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I honestly feel that this era, I think, has helped us to understand a lot of things about leadership. And I believe that in the future, we'd probably be a lot more careful in terms of our selection.
I'll just share one thing with you before we go to this commercial break, and it comes, to some extent, it may touch on the discussion around Reverend Atherley. There's recently been a story about a televangelist in the United States who is seeking to get his congregation to put up 50-something million U.S. dollars for him to buy a plane. And it falls within something that is called prosperity theology. It is sometimes called the prosperity gospel, or the health and wealth gospel, or the gospel of success. It is a religious belief among some Christians who hold that financial blessing and physical well-being are always the will of God for them, and that faith, positive speech, and donations to religious causes will increase one's material wealth. Prosperity theology views the Bible as a contract between God and humans. If humans have faith in God, He will deliver security and prosperity. The doctrine emphasizes the importance of personal empowerment, proposing that it is God's will for His people to be happy. It is based on interpretations of the Bible that are mainstream in Judaism with respect to the Hebrew Bible, though less so to Christianity. And therefore, you are seeing a lot of that, not only in the United States, but places like Nigeria, Ghana, many African states, and here in the Caribbean, we are seeing an emphasis on what is called prosperity theology. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good morning.
Greetings and salutations to your good self. Mr. Ellis, you being so objectionable, I went delve and pry into Bishop Atherley's affair at the present moment, due to the fact I publicly said that you don't vote for a minister, you vote for a representative. At this time, I shall not expatiate. Prior to the voting out of office on May the 24th, 2018, I said that the Democratic Labour Party has made Watergate look like schoolboys, learning from the newly appointed Prime Minister's first post-cabinet press conference, there is truly a grave concern. I fear that, to say this, sir, during a conversation with some friends, I told them, don't be surprised if a lot of the Democratic Labour Party supporters and close friends are given political jobs, as they know that they are going to lose the government. And if the Labour Party want to get rid of them, they will have to be very generous to them for breaking contract.
Okay, thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes?
Yeah. Now, let me go back to Friday last week. My wish was that we would pray for our new government and that they would not allow complacency, arrogance to take place, and they would not become uppity, as my grandmother would have said. No, then there would be times when there would have been differences between the members of the party, but they would also allow the differences to be settled in an amicable way. Now, I was thinking then, that they should be true to themselves, and they will in turn be able to be true to the people who elect them. Now, I was in a mode of not feeling talking, but however, yesterday after I heard Mr. Clark, I listened, and then this morning I'm hearing other things. Now, what I'm hearing, that someone, a man of the cloth, if you please, not wanting any part in this scheme of things because he's not getting a ministry. Now, in my opinion, he still has a ministry. That is the ministry of the church. Now, this is where he would be looking after his flock, all the neighbor people in the neighborhood, even those who come from afar, and try to lead them in the right direction.
Okay, thank you. Another call. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
I've got a few things to say. First, I'm like Mr. Adelie's decision. We can't even put nothing to it because we can't even say, well, it's for the betterment because it's not similar to Hamalashley's decision when he made when the party has lost.
I think before we go any further, I'm going to ask, I'm going to say goodbye to Peter because
okay.
Having him on the line is creating a problem there with the sound of the line.
Okay.
So I think that we, but Peter, we're going to, if necessary, we'll come back to you.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, please. And next, I think that the Democratic Labour Party shall refuse the Senate, anything like that, for now.
Why?
And sit down and think about where they went wrong and revamp, get the younger blood, let the older ones who are able to stay there and guide and groom the young ones and make something for the Democratic Labour Party that the great excellent Errol Wattenborough has built. We've done the former Prime Minister, he didn't come to give us no sort of light on our economy, on what's going on. He wasn't a news person, and that's where the Democratic Labour Party had broken down.
I think that the Democratic Labour Party needs to go out to the people of Barbados to get
right.
a better sense of what Barbadians need from them.
Yeah.
And for a group of people to sit down, as they have done in the recent past, and to believe that they alone can determine what Barbadians need is not going to help them. The Barbados Labour Party under Mayor Motley spent a long time out in the community with rubbing shoulders and that sort of thing to formulate a plan of action that they could bring to the Barbadian public that they consider to be attractive. So I think the Democratic Labour Party is at the crossroads right now. They have a major problem on their hands because we have two periods now that we have seen them take charge of this country and left the economy in trouble.
Yes.
You know, and for them, that is a big hurdle because it leaves a bitter taste in the mouth. So that they have to determine what it is that they are going to present to the public in terms of their philosophy. Is it enough to say that Barbados is not just an economy, it's a society? If you come back with that as a Democratic Labour Party, given what has happened on two occasions now, how will that resonate with the public? I mean, ultimately, it also is influenced by how the government runs things because, you know, sometimes people vote against the government more than they vote for the opposition.
Yeah. They should have continued, like what the late David used to do, go out to the people and let the people hear. And that's what they're for. And I believe that if they go and sit down, strategize, and study that, and then go out to the people and start going out and speaking and listening, not only speaking.
What do you
listening.
Think the people want from them right now?
I think the people want from them to stay quiet. Just let the BLP do what they say they have to do. I believe that's what they want. They want Democratic Labour Party out the way for now. And that's it. Just give the Barbados Labour Party a little time, and then within probably about 3 years, then come back out again. But all that time, they're rebuilding.
Yeah.
They're rebuilding, they're making things, trying to put things together that what they can do, and then go there, and as they're in the background, then they'll be hearing what the public wants.
You sound like somebody who is sorry for them.
But I'm going to be truthful. I am a Democratic Labour Party supporter.
Yes, I can
hear and that. I would not say another word. But, you know...
Where do you think they went wrong? Because it is crucial...
They went wrong by the Prime Minister. He was the person.
How so?
He did not come out and speak to we, the people.
As
never
a,
did.
As a supporter...
Come, When he do come, he came. When he come, he coming with these words that you are like muffled in your mind. You can't understand everything because everyone is not educated that high, you know. And if he cannot speak, let someone do it for him. But he's right. Let him sit down, you know, and put in his little thing in between. But that's where it all went wrong.
But as a supporter, mm-hmm. I would believe that you wouldn't be sitting down and seeing all of that happen and saying nothing. Did you ever try to get information to them?
I always do.
And what happened?
I always do. I don't know what happened. Because, you know, you speak and, oh, yes, I would do this and, yes, I would do that. And I even spoke to Chris Sings at one point, and he listened to me, and he said, you know what, that's, and he wrote some of the things I said. And I did hear something that I had said to him when he spoke on TV, you know. But, you know, there's many more he spoke to, but
you couldn't get through to the Prime Minister of the day.
No. And I wanted to get through to him, although I tried my best, I could not, because I know he would have listened and he would have liked what I had to tell him. Yes.
A lot of people like you stayed away from the polls.
I went to the polls, baby.
You went to the polls.
I still went to the polls. That's why I can come and talk. Mm-hmm. I went to the polls and I put my ex for the Democratic Labour Party.
So why did you do that while you had all these reservations?
I am with them. I am sinking with the ship.
Okay.
I am not going to be a traitor. I'm going to stick with them. When they're wrong, I give them those lashes. When they're right, I pat them on the back. I'm not going to go anywhere else. I'm going to sink with my ship, and I'm going to rise again with it.
All right, ma'am. Thank you very much.
I want them to know. I want the people to know that the same way we are saying, someone has to answer for all of this money that's lost, that the Democratic, mm-hmm. Social, the Barbados Labour Party, with the Barack and all that.
I want to say one thing to that, though. The Democratic Labour Party were in office for 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
If they recognized that there was something wrong,
mm-hmm.
which was done by the Barbados Labour Party people who were there before,
mm-hmm.
they had a responsibility to take action.
That is what I'm saying.
Right. So to come now, if wrongdoing is exposed, and say mm-hmm. two wrongs make a right, that don't sit well with a lot of us.
I know.
Because we don't feel that that is what Barbados should be about. And there are a lot of people who are sick and tired of politicians treating the country in this way and then walking away and appear to be feeling very comfortable with the way that they have done things.
That is true.
It's not right. I mean, look, they've got people in this country who can't get a university education, you know, because we were told it is not possible. The country cannot afford it. So if that is the case,
mm-hmm.
you can't come and present to us excess when it comes to how the government has handled some of the people that it engaged with.
That is true, yeah.
You know, because it looks unfair.
It looks unfair.
All right, and there are people out there, not only those who can't go to university because they got paid tuition fees, but they got people who are basically struggling, hungry.
Struggling, yeah.
Some, you know, one person in a family with a job, and the other people, they're scrambling and that sort of thing, largely because of the economic circumstances.
But they got some too as well, but they're hanging their hats higher than they can reach them. That's the problem as well.
That's true too.
We like to depend on the politicians too much.
Agreed.
We have become a society of leaning on the politicians. The politicians have got to make it understood. Don't come around and promise us, oh, I will help you. Let the people get up and go and look for jobs themselves. That is the problem too. Get up and go and look for a job. Fight. If you're fighting out there and you go and you say, well, I went and get, you know, I like this place, I went and I'm waiting on the answer. And the politician can make a call and say, well, he or she's really, you know, keen on it. But everybody wants to get in government. And when they do get in government, in these government places, they're not doing their job, not all. They're not doing their job. They're sitting, they're being bombasted or morally. You know who sent me here? And that kind of way. That's why our country is going the way it's going. The politicians have got to stop making we the people feel that they can do everything for us. They're telling us they can bed our skin. They can go to the bathroom for us. No, they've got to stop it and come straight and let us pull ourselves together and understand. We, people of Barbados, is the government. Thank you for listening, mister.
Thank you very much for calling. Very well said. You do too. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks. It's 11:22. Good morning. This person says, Mr. Ellis, no wonder Chris was asking Miss Motley where she's going to get the money from. A reference to the tough economic circumstances facing the government. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm well, and you?
I'm not so bad. Now, Mr. Ellis, I have some advice for the Democrat Labour Party. But before I get to it, I heard you made a statement to the effect that they're stopping people from going to university in Barbados. Do you recognize that we have a lot of people who have university degrees from home sitting down? Do you know that? Do you know that we have people who have university degrees who are doing clerical positions in Barbados? What I'm trying to say is it's not university education that is our problem. It's playing work for people who get university education. I think you'll also be aware that the Trinidad government, the University at Trinidad, have just cut their staff by about 300 bodies, including the academic staff. And I've just put that on the table just to say that we are not the only one who is struggling to provide. I don't think we really can afford free secondary education, free tertiary education. I don't care what anybody says.
Missed the point that I was making.
No, go ahead.
You missed the point. I made a connection between that and wastage and giving certain people special favors, like writing off $330,000 for the importation of a high-end Mercedes vehicle that I understand is already on the streets.
Mm-hmm. But
you know, when you can do something like that, it flies in the face of the other point that is being made about affording tertiary level education for every person that you can tell me is home doing nothing. What about the people who have been educated and are working and are making a contribution, and some of them are self-employed? They're not all home doing nothing.
Ms. Ellis, I get your point, but you see, you made a very important statement early on. Whenever a government changes, the incoming government is always playing things to discredit that previous government for things that they have
we
done
accept
or
that.
Should have done.
You know,
yeah,
Arthur, and we therefore accept that. But yeah, you know what matters here?
Mm.
We are sensible enough to recognize what is valid and what is not, what is merely political and what really cuts to the quick of our own economic survival and what is considered to be morally right and legally right.
Yeah.
So okay, we understand those differences, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. Let me just address this issue here with the DLP. I think it's time for the DLP to cast off any wounded pride and self-pity that they might have endured and realize that they represent a constituency of several thousand Barbadians and have done so over the last 60-something years. So if they've got knocked on their pants, they got to get up and brush themselves off and continue to look to the future. Now, I would also like to suggest that they put their heads together, those of them who are still interested, because, you know, sometimes, you know, as things happen, people walk away. But those who are still interested, put their heads together and find out what happened between 6 p.m. Thursday and midnight, where the wheels fell off their wagon. Something just went wrong. I think they should work on that and not.
I want to suggest to you that the wheels fell off the wagon long before then, and it is people like you who encourage them to travel in such a way that the wheels would continue to fall off the wagon. You never helped them by saying, listen, check this and check that. You came here every day and defended the things that they needed to put the brakes on. You did.
You use your words very carefully. I ain't come to defend anything. I come with my own ideas.
They just turned out that your own ideas coincided with defending the Democratic Labour Party's policies
at
the time.
No, Mr. Ellis. You know you know that I have come on this program 100 times and said the first thing we want to do is restore a national savings bank. Did they do that? The answer is no. That was one of the first things I advocated, and I must have done it about 100 times.
But that wasn't seen as criticizing the policies of the government, you know.
No, I had my own ideas of what policies should have been instituted to help Barbados.
You heard the lady just now?
You heard that lady who
spoke earlier who said that she's a Dem?
Give me a chance.
Let me ask you a question. You get a chance to talk a lot. Let me ask you some questions today. You heard that woman speak. You heard her point an accusing finger at the leadership style. In all the years that you were calling this program, how much attention did you pay to the damage that that leadership style could have done to the Democratic Labour Party?
Mr. Ellis, I am not a political scientist. I have told you, as well as told other moderators, I am not here to analyze political style or passion. I am here to share my ideas with the country, whoever wants to hear or who wants to listen. I am not here to judge what Mr. Stewart's style was good, bad, or indifferent. I can tell you one thing, though. They got a lot of advice that they ignored. And
from you?
They ignored that advice, it came back.
From you?
Them.
From you?
Of course, anytime I come on this program, I always come with suggestions of things that should be done and can be done to help Barbados.
I know that many people who listen to this program know better than that.
Well, you will say as well. But let me just go on to say very quickly, sir. I believe that the Dems should accept the two positions in the Senate because it still gives them a pair of ears and a pair of eyes to monitor what's going on.
But that's been overtaken by the fact that Joseph Attlee has been sworn in this morning as the opposition leader. No two seats for them anymore.
Well,
it's up to him.
Look, I don't know he's sworn as opposition leader. I don't know how he can swear in somebody who just crossed the first opposition leader.
I mean, how the Constitution allows for it.
Who is
in the same way the Constitution allowed the former Prime Minister to run us past the dissolution of Parliament for 90 days if he so desired,
but
the Constitution allows for him to be appointed in this way.
But let me ask you a question. Who is Mr. Attlee leading? I thought you had to have some formation of a party or registered party to be a leader.
The Constitution doesn't say that.
Well, I don't know. I'm not a constitutional lawyer, so I ain't going to argue the point. But I'll simply say this. If the Democrat Labour Party gets an opportunity to take those two positions in the Senate, they should take it because it still represents a place in Parliament. They have seen 26-2,
too late.
And 24-3. And you can get back, if you can get back from there, you can get back from this position that they're in right now. So my position is that those of them who are still interested in representing the people can put their heads together.
I wonder with the Trinidadian caller that used to be cursing us so much on CBC. I ain't hear her since the elections. I would like to know if she gone away. She gone to Trinidad or someplace.
Ms. Ellis.
At least I hear you.
Mr. Ellis, I always tell you, I come with ideas and issue. I deal with issues and ideas. I don't come here to defend the party. You don't hear me accusing the party of anything. I come here to share my ideas. I have been around, thank God, for a reasonable time. I have seen parties come and go. I have lived in different countries and I've seen politics inside and outside. And when I come to this program, I come here with one specific intention. Either to inform younger people who might not be aware of certain things and to advise those who are in positions of authority that certain things are going wrong and they have to fix them or should fix them. Another thing that I have always been very strong on, the youth. I've been very strong on programs for the youth. I said some time ago, not for the first time, that our secondary schools should have a religious chaplain. Each school should have a chaplain which should interact with the older form, the fifth and sixth forms and so on, relative to moral and spiritual issues. I have said that 101 and nobody has paid any attention to it. It's not in anybody's manifesto. Nobody talks about it on the platform.
All right.
It is simply ignored.
I have already indicated that once you have a change of government, you have a significant change in the tone of this program, Brass Tacks. And you are just reinforcing that point, that for the next couple of years, what we are likely to have from you would be less of a defense of the Democratic Labour Party and more ideas being placed on the table. Is that correct?